From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Biden bails on Ukraine, American truckers head to D.C., and Texas takes a stand on adolescent abuse. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. It was early morning Thursday when the imminent threat of Russia invading Ukraine became a reality. This weekend, we are going to begin our show with the reaction to that news from FRC President Tony Perkins and his good friend, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, recorded Thursday afternoon. Here's Tony Perkins.
In response to Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, President Biden today announced new sanctions against Russia, but acknowledged that it will take some time for their full impacts to be felt by Russia and its economy. In his remarks earlier this afternoon, the president also said America stands up to bullies, just 3 minutes after saying the U.S. will not be sending troops to Ukraine. Earlier this afternoon, we connected with CBN News senior international correspondent George Thomas, who is on the ground in Ukraine. George, what's it look like right now on the ground in Ukraine?
Yeah, but 15 hours into this invasion, look, the Ukrainians are pretty much pinned on all sides. I mean, it started in the east, it moved to the south, and then to the north. The troops, Russian troops rolling their tanks across the Crimean Bridge did not face any resistance. The same to some extent in the north as they rolled down into Belarus. My understanding is that as of this hour, we're not getting any reports, concrete reports, that the Russians have passed the so-called line of contact in the east. It apparently seems like the Ukrainians are holding that position. But seriously, you know, they are sort of surrounded on all three sides.
George, let me ask you this right now. Do the Ukrainians feel as if they're standing alone?
The Ukrainians absolutely feel like they're standing alone. Absolutely. One source said to me moments after the first bomb started dropping, he said, George, we don't need more sanctions. We don't need a unity, show of unity amongst the EU or NATO members. What we need is hundreds of U.S. Fighter jets and NATO jets flying over Ukrainian airspace. That is what's going to send a very powerful message to the Kremlin. You've got to use force to deal with a person like Vladimir Putin.
Again, that was CBN's George Thomas in Ukraine. Join me now with more on the current crisis is the former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Mr. Secretary, welcome back to the program.
Tony, it's great to be with you. Thank you for having me on today at this very, very challenging moment.
You said recently that it's not Vladimir Putin who has changed. It's America's leadership that has changed. Explain.
Well, for our 4 years, my time in service as a Secretary of State, the last 2.5 of those 4 years, we were resolved to protect American interests everywhere. We put America first, and we let bad guys, we let authoritarians from Xi Jinping in China to Chairman Kim in North Korea to the Ayatollah in Iran, and indeed Vladimir Putin himself in Russia, we let them know we were going to protect the things that mattered most to America. This administration has not been able to manage that same level of deterrence. You can see Vladimir Putin hears Biden, President Biden, come to the microphone and give some weak sanctions in response to a massive invasion of Europe. That's signaling to the world that America has lost its capacity, its leadership capacity to actually deliver good outcomes. We're a great nation. We're a powerful nation. This thug understands one thing, brute force. We should give him the brute force that he deserves for the evil aggression he has now imposed on the Ukrainian people.
Mr. Secretary, I mean, going back to use a very simple analogy, the schoolyard in elementary school, you get bullies and they pick on those who are weak. And I would think that what happened was that during the Trump years that Vladimir Putin was pretty much bottled up, hemmed in because he did not know how America would respond. He knew it would be with force. But I think it appears that he's picking on America and others are ignoring America and picking on others because he perceives weakness.
I fear that that's absolutely what's taking place. And when I say I fear that, that's certainly what's happening in Ukraine today. I fear that we'll see a cascading series of crises, right? Even as we speak, Tony, the United States is in Vienna with the Russians on their side of the table, on our side of the table, the American side of the table, negotiating a deal to create a pathway for a nuclear weapon for the Iranians. You've got Russians negotiating as partners of the United States while Russia is invading Ukraine. That is, you can hear it in my voice. This is incomprehensible to me. It sends exactly the signal that Vladimir Putin hears, which is, I can move about the cabin. I can go destroy the lives of Ukrainian children and women, and the United States and the West will do nearly nothing to push back against me.
Will Vladimir Putin stop with Ukraine? Is this simply a desire to create the buffer states around Russia, or will he go beyond?
I think we should take Vladimir Putin at his word in terms of his intentions. He's spoken about this many times, most recently in a long meandering revision of history, of the history of World War II and the history of Russia, indeed, where he talked about countries in particular, Finland, the Baltics. We should be sure that Vladimir Putin desires the resurrection of the Soviet Union or a greater Russia from the times of Peter the Great. Vladimir Putin will be intent on this only until the moment he meets force and real resistance. So long as we are soft, so long as the West allows him to have $100 barrel oil and to continue to destroy freedoms in Ukraine, he'll continue to keep moving, Tony.
As you mentioned earlier, this has cascading effects. I mean, we're already seeing this in Taiwan, where China has flown into defense airspace of the Taiwanese. And I know you're going to be meeting with the Taiwanese president, I believe, next week. Where else might we see activity as a result of America's response or lack thereof to what's happening in Ukraine?
Tony, I think you can see it in a number of places. You'll see it in certain dimensions of warfare. You'll see them continue to build out their missile systems, their space systems, their cyber capabilities. You'll see it physically on the ground. They'll be more aggressive in Syria, where you have U.S. forces nearly tank nose to tank nose with the Russians. It wouldn't surprise me if they continue to move the boundaries in places like Georgia and other regions that are close to Russia. And this is someone who understands what power is, and when power meets weakness, it's a total mismatch, Tony.
Well, in an unbelievable but candid look at the misplaced priorities of this administration, John Kerry, who was former Secretary of State, said this about what's happening in Ukraine. Play clip 8, please.
Hope diplomacy will win, but massive emissions consequences to the war, but equally importantly, you're going to lose people's focus. You're going to lose certainly big country attention because they will be diverted, and I think it could have a damaging impact. I hope President Putin will help us to stay on track with respect to what we need to do for the climate.
I mean, we have innocent civilians, women and children being killed, and we have John Kerry talking about hoping Vladimir Putin will help preserve the environment.
Tony, I don't know where to begin. You know, this administration has truly led with climate change in every field. John Kerry was the first American senior leader to go meet with Vladimir Putin, not Secretary Blinken, not President Biden, but John Kerry. We told Vladimir Putin, if you'll tell us a few lies on carbon reduction, we'll let you do whatever it is you want to do. This is what we're seeing today. This is ludicrous to say that somehow, boy, in spite of the fact he's invading Ukraine, I sure hope he'll take a coal-fired power plant down. A, he's not going to take his coal-fired power plant down. And B, that's just crazy to think that the correct response to an authoritarian aggressor like Vladimir Putin is to say, hey, can we all meet in Copenhagen and have a cup of tea and talk about climate change? If I were President Biden, I'd call him back immediately. I'd tell him to stop diminishing the United States in the eyes of the world.
This underscores something that a phrase that we hear often, I use it many times a day, that is, elections have consequences. And we're seeing this play out both on the international stage and domestically. When we see the misplaced priorities of this administration, we're paying for it at the pump. We're seeing, you know, we got truckers, you know, driving across the country, standing up for freedom. You know, we have innocent civilians dying in foreign countries. All coming back to American weakness in misplaced priorities.
You know, Tony, you hit it on the head there. We could get a twofer. Perhaps the quickest thing that President Biden could do to put pressure on Vladimir Putin would be to immediately direct that we lift all the new regulations he's put in place, denying America the capacity to produce its own energy and ship that energy around the world. I don't know what it's sitting at as we're speaking today. Close to $100 a barrel, Tony. That's right. Going to be a gas pump for every American. It's going to be LNG too, natural gas. Going to cost more for folks to heat their homes or cool their homes in the summertime. We have the capacity to drill. We were up to almost 13 million barrels per day in the Trump administration. We're now down to something like 85% of that. President Biden says, I'm going to open the strategic petroleum reserve. The biggest petroleum reserve and the most strategic one is the one that's underground. We ought to drill, baby, drill and ship it. Ship it to Germany, ship it to Estonia, ship it to Ukraine, ship it to Latvia and Lithuania. We can change the lives of these people. And when you drive the price down to $50 a barrel, where it's at for much of the Trump administration, you will be denying the very monetary fuel that is allowing Vladimir Putin to roll tanks in and kill women and children in Ukraine today.
Secretary, Mr. Secretary, just got a few seconds, but do you see this administration having the capacity to do a course correction?
Tony, you begin with prayer. I pray that they will get this right. You and I have been in the trenches working on religious freedom, too. I was speaking today with a friend named Father Oleg, a great Christian man who's a leader of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, who's running a hospital in Kyiv. He sent pictures from what's taking place, the soldiers that are already coming back, the destruction of the freedom of Ukrainians to make decisions for themselves, their democracy, their faith. This will be destroyed. I pray that President Biden will come to see this clearly and come to take the actions that will lead America to the right place to push back against Vladimir Putin.
And we will join you in that prayer. Mr. Secretary, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, sir. Have a good day, Tony.
You too. All right, coming up, our Freedom Convoy. Our coverage continues. We'll be talking with the national organizer of one of the leading convoys. Don't go away. That's next here on this edition of Washington Watch.
Most of us have at least one friend or family member who is pro-choice. As Christians, we are called to defend the weak and to speak truth in love. When we advocate for the unborn, we must do so in a way that is both truthful and loving. FRC Center for Human Dignity exists to give a voice to the voiceless by helping others speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. Access our free resources addressing human dignity at frc.org/life and learn how you can speak truth both boldly and lovingly.
Taking a stand, defending Freedom Convoy.
Well, it's day two for the trucker-led People's Convoy, which set out yesterday from Southern California, and we are continuing to track along with the procession as it makes its way peacefully across the country toward Washington, D.C., standing up, or should I say rolling, for freedom. Joining me for today's special Defending Freedom Convoy segment is the national organizer of the People's Convoy, Maureen Steele. She is connecting with us. In fact, we're still trying to get her connected from the road in Arizona, where the convoy is right now. In fact, if you want to go to their website, they have all their stops listed out over the next few days. And there's a link at tonyperkins.com if you'd like to keep up with what they're doing. Also, at tonyperkins.com. We were talking earlier with former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo about praying for the people in Ukraine. Well, we have a prayer guide at tonyperkins.com that can kind of give you some history there and also encourage you and how to pray for our brothers and sisters in Ukraine. Well, joining me now from the road is Maureen Steele. She is the national organizer for the People's Convoy that's headed to Washington, D.C. Maureen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi there. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Well, absolutely. So on yesterday's show, we had Pastor Rob McCoy, who prayed over the convoy before it embarked on its cross-country journey. So I wanted to check in and see how things have been going over the this first day on the road.
I got to tell you, this has been an unbelievable experience for all of us on this convoy. But the outpouring of love and support, the generosity of the American people, it is overwhelming. We have 5 tractor trailers right now, only 2 stops, where we started in Barstow and where we marshaled last night in in Kingsman. We have 5 tractor trailers full of supplies and food and water, and We had two companies give us 25,000 gallons of fuel for the truck. The kindness of people has just been staggering. The support, we have Rubbermaid bins full of letters from children, money, just cards wishing us well, thanking God we're doing this and praying for us. It has just been, you know, God's hand is on this convoy. This country was founded, you know, one nation under God, and I don't believe God is going to let this country fall to evil hands and to socialism. You know, people are rising up. The veils are coming off people's eyes, and every creed, color, and nation was represented at that rally yesterday when we left. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen and witnessed and been part of. Just absolutely extraordinary. I'm so proud to be an American today. I'm proud of our country, and I'm proud of the way our countrymen are rallying under the banner of freedom together. That is the one thing that unites us all, and liberty crackles through all of our veins, and this country is strong and united, and we are going to get our freedoms back.
Well, Maureen, we want to Thank you for your leadership. It is amazing to watch, and that's why we're doing this segment each day, kind of tracking the progression here. Because what this shows is that no matter who you are, where you are, if you'll simply use what you have, you can defend freedom. And that's why I'm so grateful for the truckers all across this country and in Canada that have stood up against tyranny and doing it in a peaceful, lawful manner. I mean, this is this. I think that's why people are coming out to support you. It's because they're thankful for those that are standing up to defend freedom.
Yes, and yeah, what's so amazing is that there's nothing hateful. There's no derogatory flags. There's nothing like that. It's purely love of country. I just left a gas station a few minutes ago, and this woman recognized me and came up and she hugged me, and then her girlfriend did. But we get out to the parking lot, and she said, you know, all this time, for the last 2 years, I felt alone, like I was the only one. And she was being part of this convoy now. She was seeing all the support. She was, we're the majority. You know, we are vastly the majority of people that want freedom and want our country back to the way it was. And we're going to take it back. And like you said, in a loving way, but a strong way, the voices of the American people are about to be raised very loudly with this convoy. Like when Trudeau stood up and said, you know, what was going on in Canada was a fringe group. Anyone with two eyes in their head that was looking at some of the footage absolutely knew that was not the case. That was no fringe group. That was majority of the country rallying against Trudeau. And that is happening here.
Yeah, I think he was actually looking in the mirror when he said that.
It's the same here.
This is more than just truckers. You have others that have joined this convoy as well. So talk about some of the others that have joined in.
I mean, that's one of the most beautiful things. And it's one of the things as having been the one that's worked with the truckers and rallied the truckers through this whole process. It absolutely is not just the truckers. They're the tip of the spear, you know, our wonderful backbone of America, the kings of the road. But this is, I mean, most of this convoy leaving Barstow was just people, just folk, families with their kids and the family dog in the minivan, and students, and just people. It is indeed the people's convoy, just led by the truckers. And it was just extraordinary to see. To give you an example, we had 1,100 just people. We had, right now, we have about 200 trucks and RVs, and probably twice as many in just cars as yesterday. So we had 1,100 cars yesterday. We have about 2,000 today, and we've doubled the truckers and RVs. So the convoy was 6 miles long yesterday. I'd say it's probably about 12 today, and it is just growing, and it's going to grow bigger and bigger at every marshalling point. But I love that there's just families on it, and they brought the family dog. And when we marshal, everyone has their dogs out running around in the fields and parking lots. And this is the most loving event I think I've ever attended. It's just the love for your fellow man and the ability to help each other and the willingness to just reach out and help is just extraordinary.
Well, Maureen, we're out of time up against a break, but we're going to keep checking in with you and drive safely and try to be the first one to the rest stop. I know it's going to be a long line with 12 miles worth of cars. Great to talk with you.
Indeed. Thank you.
All right. Coming up, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has released a formal opinion concluding that performing certain sex change procedures on children, whether it's by surgery or by medicine, is child abuse under Texas law. We'll talk with the Attorney General about that and what it means. Next, don't go away.
Religious freedom is the freedom to hold religious beliefs of one's choice and to live according to those beliefs. So, why should you care about it? At Family Research Council, we care about religious freedom internationally because we believe it is an essential human right that all governments have an obligation to protect. Go to frc.org/IRF to check out Family Research Council's latest resources on international religious freedom and learn what steps you can take to help the cause of the persecuted.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Next week, in fact, next Tuesday night, President Biden will give his State of the Union address. Well, on Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern time, I will give the State of Faith, Family, and Freedom. You can join us. Go to TonyPerkins.com. That'll be at 8 p.m. on Eastern time as we take a look at the State of Faith, Family, and Freedom in America. The most fundamental job of a medical doctor should be to first do no harm. But that ancient ethos has long since been thrown to the wind. Many doctors today readily prescribe to patients who are minors cross-sex hormones, drugs to block the natural process of puberty. They do so under pressure by the leftist groups that have been leaning on a number of these medical associations. They also are doing gender reassignment surgery, despite the long-term effects these so-called treatments will have on developing bodies, including permanent sterilization. Well, one attorney general is standing up to this. Joining me now to talk about how he is helping stem the tide of irreparable harm on vulnerable children is Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. General, you with us?
I lost you just for a second. I didn't hear. I'm sorry. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I was just talking about your 13-page opinion where you look at what is happening through the prescription of through the application of drugs and surgical procedures that are causing sterilization in underage children and minors. And you have declared that based upon Texas law, this is a form of child abuse.
Yes, that's exactly what we found. You know, we did a lot of research. Our job is very simple. We're not making law. We're not interpreting. We're basically just exposing what the law is. And that's what we did. We spent a lot of my team spent literally hundreds of hours doing the research on this. And it's pretty clear in our laws, at least, that if you sterilize a child, whether it's through physical means or whether it's through some type of chemical means, that's child abuse in Texas. And it's wrong.
And you, in your opinion, you point out that really the zenith of state power pertains to the protection of children. And so this, of all areas, when you're talking about minor children that are not of the age of majority, not able to make certain decisions, like in some places getting a tattoo, can't get a driver's license, but yet yep. We are allowing them to move forward with something that is irreparable?
Yeah, it's pretty insane. I mean, in so many, most other medical procedures that have a significant impact, and most other decisions that have a significant impact, you have to be at least 21 when you're to have those done. And so for something like this, it's irreparable. It causes harm that cannot be undone. It seems to me that Texas has gotten it right, that these children need to be protected until they can make their own decision. And as you know, at least some of the research I've seen suggests that a lot of these people that do these changes, a lot of these kids that do changes, often regret it down the road.
Yeah, in fact, the studies, and you point to them in your opinion piece, anywhere from, I think it's like 61% to 89% of these youth will growth out of their gender dysphoria if given time and in some cases counseling. But what's happening here is that if these procedures are done, they're locked into this. And and they might be able to, you know, change the, you know, the structure of their bodies, but they can never go back and undo the damage that's been done.
Yeah, the genie's out of the bottle, I like to say, because it's just, you can't fix what's been done. And I know just from having four kids, I'm sure you have children. I mean, when my kids were 16 or 15 or 12 or, you know, sometimes even a little older than that, I mean, they weren't making the most rational decisions. And I this is what parents do. They try to guide their children through good things. And they're not going to make the right decision on this. There's no way they can know at that age what their future is going to be if they make a final decision on this.
And one of the points that you actually point out, basic fact, but you start off in your opinion, is that you actually cannot change your biological sex. You can change your physical features, but you can never, even though they call it a sex change, you can never change your sex.
Yeah, it's really a misnomer. It's just a fact. We have chromosomes, and they are what they are. And, you know, you're either scientifically a female or scientifically a male, and that's just the way God made us. And that's a reality, and you can definitely go in and change things. But it does not, in the end, change whether you're male or female.
And that has implications for individuals as they're treated medically, because men and women are treated differently. And I know for a fact that that has led to complications in some cases where those masquerading as men have been treated as men when they were women. And it has had devastating consequences. General, final question for you. What's been the response to your opinion there in the state of Texas?
You know what? I think, you know, most Texans are pretty reasonable. It's what I always try to tell people, this is the law. I mean, if you want to change, go to the legislature and lobby the legislature. But this is the law, and my job is to tell people what the law is when I'm asked. And I think that the Texas legislature got it right. I think most Texans think that the legislature got it right.
Yeah. Yeah. Facts are facts. But sometimes people don't like the facts. General Paxton, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for stopping by today.
Thanks, Tony. Have a great day.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.